Hello, everyone, and welcome to Now Spinning, the official podcast of the Lansing Community College Vinyl Record Club. We meet twice a month to listen to vinyl and talk about music. Stay tuned to learn about how you can get in touch with us and attend our meetings. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Now Spinning. We have a very special episode for you today. Before we get started, why don't we just go around the room and introduce ourselves?
Hi, my name is Steve Robinson.
And Jacob Zokvik.
Leo Ackerman.
And I am Simon Medina, as you might know already. That first name you heard might seem a little bit familiar to you if you go here at LCC. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, Steve?
Okay. my name is Steve Robinson. I am the president of Lansing Community College, and I am so psyched to be on the podcast. I know I've been referred to as a friend of the show, but I'm glad to be on the show. Thank you.
For a little bit more context, Steve basically started the Vinyl Record Club as a fun thing to do during the pandemic. And we can get a little bit more into that.
Yeah, well, good conversation.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, I just want to say, first off, thank you for coming on. We've been looking forward to this for a while now.
So have I.
Very good.
And thanks for starting the record club.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you guys, I may have taken a big role in starting it, but you are the ones who built it. And I hope we get a chance to talk about that.
Oh, we will. Don't worry. We're going to get to that.
Great.
But just to start off, you know, you have a long history with music and records and such. Do you know, like, what are your, like, earliest musical memories, do you think?
Oh, I love that question. And it's spontaneous because I haven't thought about that in a while. Earliest musical memory, my grandfather, my mom's dad, was a super musical guy. He put himself through college and medical school in the 30s playing saxophone in dance bands. This is before there were jukeboxes. And, you know, so if you were going to have a party, and, you know, there was going to be dancing, there had to be a band there. And he didn't play professionally or anything, but he had a record collection. He was into audio equipment. And he was the person in my family that, you know, I got a lot of musical influence with. And I would always, you know, mess around with his records and his equipment. So that's my grandfather. Flash forward, we named our son Owen, and he is a professional saxophonist. That's kind of cool. My mother, too, was a really musical person. And nobody in my immediate family played instruments, but my mom had a record collection, and this is the 70s. She had like this like untouchable piece of furniture, which was her stereo, you know, had a diamond needle in it, and she put, you know, mid-century modern cabinet that she polished with Pledge and everything like that. Wow. But from an early age, I was into audio equipment. Every extra piece of money I had as a young person went to, you know, buying a little piece of stereo equipment or records.
Going off of the earliest musical memory thing,
yes.
I want to ask real early on, can you remember specifically any record that you heard when you were younger that made you stop in your tracks and go, what is that? Or something that really like sort of unlocked a new part of yourself, I guess, that you hadn't thought about before?
I love that question. So many. And it makes me think, Leo, before I answer, because I have so many of them. Music, and particularly recorded music, to me are like smells. You know, they can take you right back there, connect you to some deep part of your brain. You know, if you smell something you haven't smelled in a long time, it takes you right back to that first time you smelled it. Some of those sounds are like that. My mom was a horse person, and she loved country and Western. So like a lot of, like, when I think of Willie Nelson or Merle Haggard, that was my mom's stuff, playing on an 8-track in her station wagon or a big Suburban when she was hauling a horse trailer. The other thing is, you know, my grandparents played a lot of music when I was hanging out, and it was that music of the day. My grandfather, the guy who played saxophone, he loved Duke Ellington. Nice. But in my other set of grandparents, a little more pop stuff like Percy Faith and his orchestra. And this very sort of, you know, almost kind of schmaltzy early 60s stuff. And then AM radio, Leo, when you talked about that, you know, being a little kid in the back seat in the 70s, if you go to those early like singles of 1970s pop music that were designed to be coming out of the radio, a lot of that stuff takes me right back. And because I grew up in Detroit, so much of it's Motown. Mm-hmm. Like anything Motown, anything with the Funk Brothers and James Jamison playing bass, it's like it takes like a you know, connection, like, wow, that's the sound.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting mentioning the whole growing up in Detroit thing. Mm-hmm. So growing up in Detroit around the 70s, mm-hmm. Are there any like specific musical memories you have relating to the city?
I do, and one's really funny and a little self-deprecating. So I'm so much older than you guys. I was born in 1968, and I was a little kid in the Motown era, right? I was a little kid when Motown moved from Detroit to L.A. Mm-hmm. But Motown, generally in the country, but specifically in Detroit, was like, you couldn't avoid it, and it was so cool. Everybody loved it. I love it. So I came up on that, but what's really, really funny about Detroit, two answers to your question. In the 80s, when I was in high school, a lot of the post-punk bands that I'm sure we'll talk about and that I always bring to the record club and I know you guys love, those bands were like touring and coming to Detroit. So there was a punk scene in Detroit, and you know, I'm old enough to have seen, you know, Black Flag and the Butthole Surfers and Nick Cave, and we've talked about, I know you're a big Nick Cave fan, Leo. So I, on that first From Her to Eternity record, I mean, I saw Nick Cave at St. Andrews Hall. You know, it's so great. So that's very specific to Detroit, because St. Andrews Hall was like 3 blocks from my dad's apartment. So we saw a lot of shows at St. Andrews and the clubs downtown. But the self-effacing one, this is kind of funny. I did my junior year of college. I did a semester away at Regent's College in London. And I, of all places, I was sitting at a Bobby McFerrin concert at the Victorian Albert Hall. Okay. That was a great concert.
Yeah.
But this kid my age, but kid my age sitting next to me, he finds out I'm from Detroit. He goes nuts. He's like, you have to tell me what all the cool techno records are. And I said, what are you talking about?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So this is 1988. He says, he was so disappointed. He thought he was like going to get the main line of what are the good house and techno records from Detroit. I went home that summer, and that's how I discovered Detroit techno. By being, you know, very far away when it was happening, 8 miles from my mom's house and like 2 miles from my dad's house.
Wow.
That's really interesting. That's real interesting to think about. I mean, there's always been this phenomenon of American artists or more niche parts of American music translating way better overseas. It's real interesting to have that like actually happen to you rather than just like reading about like, oh, the English love this.
Yeah, and it came back and forth. I mean, there was a lot of back and forth, particularly with German stuff and Berlin. Oh, but, you know, initially they thought I was like the hippest kid they ever met because I came from Detroit. After they asked me, like, do you own a gun? They said, they said, what are the cool techno records? And I'm like, I couldn't tell you. And then I went back to my friends. I said, okay, I think we have to figure out what techno is. And that's where we like Kevin May, Derek Saunders, you know, those kinds of things.
Awesome.
It's very cool. So you mentioned some of those punk bands that you were influenced by when you were growing up. So I was wondering, since everybody who's gone to one of the party with the Prez, those events, always see you up there playing bass. You've played in some bands before in your past?
I have, you know, and the funny thing about that is I didn't play an instrument in high school. I briefly failed on the saxophone in junior high or middle school and dropped it really early. And then I got to college, and I was obsessed with music, like you guys. I mean, my record collection and my favorite radio shows, those were my friends. But I never played. And my RA in the dorm, I mentioned that. I said, wish I could play bass. And I said, well, we've got a new bass professor here. He would take you as a beginner. So I started as a beginner. And by the end of undergrad, I was playing in bands here in Lansing. You know, my son went to Michigan State as well, and we've compared notes about, you know, generational notes about the live music scene. And there's just, I feel like such an old guy saying this, but in the 80s, there was a band every night at Rick's, the Landshark, Small Planet. And so, you know, we put together a band and we would get on the calendar and you could play every week because there were so many bands and all these clubs had shows. But before we move on that, then you go back to the 30s. My grandfather was here in the 30s, and there were even more opportunities to be in bands because, like I said, if there was a sorority having a dance or something, they didn't just play records. They hired a band.
I think it's interesting. Elijah, now alumni, former member of the club.
Right.
He's in a band now.
Oh, cool.
And I talked to him about shows he does, and they're like, at somebody's house or at somebody's apartment.
We did that too. We certainly had house shows.
It's like you talk to them about like, have you ever played in a bar? Do you want to play? And they're like, no. To them, that's like, almost not even like a scene that they consider because it's so different from like what they were able to do. And especially when like, you know, like in Elisha's case, he would have like graduated high school in the peak of the pandemic. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like
That's
you
right.
wouldn't have been able to go to some of this stuff. And it's cool that like, yeah, the scene changes, the venues change, but it's like people definitely never give up on, I want to play music in front of my friends.
Yeah. You know,
and I want to rock out. Too.
And that's
it's
good.
Another great one.
Yeah. And at house parties and stuff. Mm. I mean, my band played house parties, but you know, it's funny you mention not being able to play in a bar. In that era of my life, I was pretty introverted, kind of shy. And like my joke was the first time I went to Rick's was our band's first gig there. I mean, I didn't go out to hear live music. I wasn't that, I mean, unless it was, you know, these other shows we're talking about, like socially, that's not what my friends and I did. We'd sit around listening to records. Mm. And you know, and early in playing in this band, I mean, I would, between sets, I would go find somewhere where people wouldn't talk to me, like sit behind the bar or something, because I, you know, just talking to random people. I do that for a living now, but, you know, it was not something that was real comfortable for me. You asked the question. The band I was in the longest was a band called Diatribe. Mm-hmm. And the folks in Diatribe are still active Lansing musicians. And they were, you know, a click older than me. So I learned a lot in that. I learned a lot about life playing in this band. It was the first time I co-signed on a loan. We got a loan to get a trailer to take our equipment from here to all the other college towns that we played in. And I loved the music scene back then. And the music scene in Lansing is still pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you say you were able to kind of come out of your shell a little bit by like participating in this kind of like band stuff, you think? And like that's helped you with your professional life now almost?
I think it has. Oh. I think it did. Yeah. That and working in a music store. I worked at Elderly Instruments. Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the end of undergrad and through the beginning of my master's degree, I worked at Elderly. And there's a lot of longevity at Elderly. There's still the people I work with still work there. I mean, you know, and some of them are retired. But I loved working at Elderly. So talking to folks, I worked in the catalog department first and then up on the sales floor. And that did help me get more comfortable, you know, dealing with the general public, having conversations a little outside of my comfort zone. Same thing with the band, having to market the band, learn a lot of lessons.
Bringing it back to your story in England, asking you about techno.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, given your time playing in bands, are there any like genres or sounds that you discovered playing in these bands or going to these shows locally?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So in Diatribe, you know, we were mostly a cover band, but with a twist. We would, we had our own originals, but we wouldn't do a cover and do it straight. So like, I'll give you an example. We would play that great song by the band called The Wait, but we did it as like a Zydeco song.
Oh.
Right. Or we would do mashups. And sometimes people really liked that. We had this really fast kind of asymmetrical version of Sunshine of Your Love by Cream that would make Cream fans mad. You know, it was, you know, so there was like, you know, ironic covers with a twist, and it was fun. And most musicians really, really liked us, and it was a lot of fun. So in that band, I discovered a ton of things like Zydeco. I had not really listened to Zydeco. Our keyboard player, a guy named Mike Lynch, who's amazing. He's still a Lansing musician. He's in a lot of bands. Organ player. We would schlep his Hammond organ to these gigs. But he also got an accordion so we could do this, you know, Zydeco stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the guitarist in the band, another local guy, Steve Olson, great guitarist, repair person at the repair shop at Elderly. He introduced me to the Meters. Like, and I think I brought the Meters to, I just love New Orleans R&B. And so I discovered a lot playing in those kinds of situations. The music I listened to in high school, we didn't play that in my band. This was not a Joy Division, Buzzcocks, XTC kind of band. People had already moved on from that. We were sort of a dance band.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool.
This would have been what, like the 90s?
Yeah, very early 90s.
Gotcha.
It's very good. So, kind of building off of the discovering kind of like the social power in the music itself.
Uh-huh.
Did that at all kind of inspire you to make the VRC? Was there anything else that like any other groups that you were seeing that you were inspired by before you got into this?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so, you know, Jacob alluded to it before. The Vinyl Record Club kind of started a team meeting at the end of the pandemic. I came here. I've started my sixth year at LCC. I in my head, I'm still the new guy, but I've been here, you know, I'm going on my sixth year. And we were coming out of the pandemic, but I was hired for this job. I got the job peak pandemic, peak lockdown. And then when things were starting to come back, I had a team meeting where I was saying, you know, I really need to connect with students. And we legitimately came up with the idea of the Vinyl Record Club as an excuse for me to hang out with LCC students. And I thought, you know, we'll see. I mean, I'm into these vinyl records. I've read articles that, you know, young people and college students are getting back into analog media. And, you know, I see young people at record stores. So we'll give it a try. And, you know, not only do you know how the story goes, you are the story. I mean, you are the students who started coming and made this what it is. So it surpassed my wildest dreams. When I listen to you on this podcast, not to be paternalistic, but I get so proud. I mean, you guys are so smart about music, and you've built such an open and inclusive club. The other thing I love about our Vinyl Record Club is it's so simple. It's a block of time where people come and eat pizza and play their records. You know, there's no...
It's like you describing what you and your friends did back in the day, and that's all it really needs to be.
That's it. That was my idea of a good time. You know, and I'm pre-video game, kind of, my chronology is that, and that's what my friends and I did. Somebody's bedroom, somebody's basement, record player, talking about and listening to records.
I think a big part of the success of the club isn't just the students, it's also you and the other faculty's open minds to new music that the students bring in. And I'm wondering, how has it been, like, connecting with new music or discovering new artists, you know, post being in the bands and mm-hmm. going around to college towns and whatnot?
Yeah. So when I was a classroom teacher, my students were always the best way for me to learn about new music. And you all are doing that for me now. I literally will text friends that I went to high school with during Vinyl Record Club and said, oh, you have to listen to this, things that are. And I love the different things that you all bring in. The other thing is, not to get all woe is me about my busy job, but my busy job, I don't have time to like read music blogs or even go shopping for records. So most of my musical knowledge, apart from you all, is kind of like frozen in time. Mm. You know, I forget which funny movie or book is about somebody who's like, you know, sealed off in a certain time frame and they're all hopelessly out of date. I think there's also some neuroscience to that. You kind of imprint the music of particular portions of your life. But I've learned so many when I look around at, you know, I know your musical tastes and I know the records that I've gone back and listened to. And I always forget the name of the Japanese record, Jacob, that you...
Shugo Tokumoto.
Yeah. And what's the name of the record? It's so great. Ooh. That record is so great.
It's a Port Entropy?
Yeah, Port Entropy. That's exactly what it is. Port Entropy. That's one of the ones I texted my buddy Todd about, who's like my closest musical friend. And but you've all done that, so that's what it is for me. New ways of learning cool music from now, and like you all know music from when I was a young person and before. So I learn a lot.
Very cool. I'd say also it kind of goes back and forth because, you know, you bring in all sorts of stuff, especially I can speak from experience. You bring in XTC, like you said, Joy Division, Buzzcocks, that kind of stuff. That was very fascinating. I had never heard of, you know, XTC before I came into the club, and now they're one of my very favorite bands, I have to say.
Well, even not just, like, stuff that I hadn't heard of. I remember, like, Brian Eno. Yeah. I knew who Brian Eno was. I'd heard some songs. I was like, yeah, this is all right. And Steve was like, no, like, go listen to this whole first album through. And I was like, oh, this is great. I've been ignoring, like, you're almost, like, spitefully ignoring it for years. You know what I mean? Like, this is just, like, knockoff David Bowie, which it isn't. Like, it's not even close.
Well, it's so, we'll just let that go.
You know, it's those ideas that you build up in, like, especially when you're young in high school and especially when there's, like, a social pressure to, like the cool music and stuff, and like old music can be so fraught in a social circle too. And that was like, yeah, like for me, a big part of the club has been like, oh, I'm allowed to listen to whatever I want. We make jokes about like sad girl music sometimes, you know what I mean? And that's like, I would have never, like 10 years ago, I would have never admitted to listening to like Japanese Breakfast. That new album, great. You know what I mean? And it's like, yeah, it's the club is so awesome because it's so accepting and everybody really is like, yeah, just listen to whatever you want, man. Like,
I agree with you. There are two little threads. I want to hear what you have to say, Leo, about it. There are two little threads I want to pull on that. One is the chronology of this. Like, so I'm enough older than you that when I got into Brian Eno, he had not yet become this ubiquitous, huge. I mean, everybody, he was cool. He produced David Bowie, did all, you know, all this stuff. But by the time you started hearing about him, like he was unavoidable, probably. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost the musical reputation is different in like 1984 for somebody like Brian Eno than it is like in 2010. That's one thing. But the other thing is, I think we all have to get over some snobbishness, right? I tell you what, so my wife and I, we've been married for 25 years, and I really had to come to grips with the snobbery I had about her CD collection. And I was a jerk about, I forget even which one. And, you know, she had to tell me, like, look, you should listen to this, and it's, you're not better than this. You have to get over this snobbery that I think, yeah, that's sometimes what young people do. Mm-hmm. But I think we like everything in our club. What were you going to say, Leo?
I was just going to go off of the whole like intergenerational thing.
Yes.
Where you said people from the club who are younger than you bring in music from your generation that you haven't heard.
That's correct.
And I think it goes vice versa. Mm-hmm. Because while there are a lot of older artists that younger people are big fans of, there are a ton of older artists who are just as good who just never made the like popularity jump to the next generation. Like a band like ESG was shown off in the club one day.
Okay.
I had never heard of them. I'm super into like alternative dance stuff like Gang of Four.
Yeah.
All of that sort of stuff. I had never heard of ESG. Never heard of any of that stuff.
Wow, that's cool.
Well, and when it doesn't get played on the radio or doesn't get put in like, you know, the playlist on Apple Music or whatever you use, like, there's no way you're ever going to hear it. Like, if it doesn't catch the algorithm, or back in the day, if it didn't get radio play, you're never going to hear it. And it's so easy to like miss huge bits of music that like you didn't know existed.
Also brings to mind how community oriented music releases used to be in the terms of like physical media, you know, like
I agree.
A lot of communities were based around these like physical albums that you had to go out and get. They only had like one like test pressing of them, maybe, mm-hmm. you know. I think this club is a great way to, in a very small way, bring that back, kind of.
Oh, yeah.
To sort of resuscitate the community aspect of music, which I feel is kind of lost.
I agree. And this turn of the conversation makes me think about something really interesting. And when I was very young, if there was a band like you were talking about, like, oh, my gosh, how could I not know? I would just go into this pit of despair, like, I'm so out of touch. I don't know. Now I get excited, like, oh, my gosh, here's a new band for me. So the thing you were talking about, Jacob, if you never heard about it, the great thing, it's there. You can go back and I'll still be discovering things, you know, forever. There's more music than we'll ever be able to listen to, right? Mm-hmm. And that I think that's exciting.
Yeah, you'll never run out of new music to listen to.
No.
And I've told some stick in the muds, some old people I know who won't be named, but that basically say like, yeah, I just don't know if like they're making music for me anymore. And I'm like, no, you're just not looking for it.
Right.
Like, yeah, okay, you can't just turn on the radio and find it again because you're going to hear the songs you like from the 80s or whatever. But like, I promise you there's some dude in his basement making a record that sounds exactly like those band from the 80s that you love. And that's like, maybe it's not new in that it's like innovative, but it's still new in that it's like, it's something new that you would probably really enjoy.
Yeah, cool.
And that's, I really encourage people to like, never stop looking for it. You know what I mean? Because you'll find it and you'll love it.
And at the end of the day, if you can't, I mean, radio isn't the most dominant format for sharing media anymore.
It's just not.
Whatever pros and cons may come with that, it does bring about a huge chunk of people who just like don't know where to find new music or don't know where to find anything new. And the simple solution to that, which I think is kind of emphasized by this club, is people.
Yep.
People that you know,
exactly.
That you talk to, mm-hmm. and that you can connect with. because the music that you're listening to is also made by those same people that
exactly.
you can connect with and
it's so true.
To.
It's so true. And then there's also this what's old is new again, because I'll tell you, like, I was a kid in the heyday of FM radio, mm-hmm. like heyday. But in Detroit, there were three classic rock stations. And so you would get your fill of, you know, Van Halen, Led Zeppelin, all that stuff. But if you want to hear all the stuff that I bring in, there was one show on public radio on like Sunday night. And I would literally set up my cassette deck and record it. And that's how I learned new music, that and going to record stores. So even when, you know, FM radio was ubiquitous, it still wasn't the main source if it was for something out of the ordinary or out of the mainstream. And I think maybe that's the way it is now.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Like I said, this club is a gateway to all sorts of great new stuff and great old stuff, like you said.
Agreed.
But it's been a huge success.
I think so, too. It's, but yeah, very good. Very big success.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're just about running out of time here today, though.
Excellent.
So if you're interested at all in checking out the club after you heard of us talk about how cool it is for a half hour.
That's right. Come.
Yeah, please. You can check out our website, which will be linked with the show. You find anything you need to know about it there. Links to past podcasts, like old playlists from past meetings, meeting themes, meeting dates, anything you'd ever want to know, all located there. Thank you all for tuning in to Now Spinning. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I love
Bye-bye.
You.
Bye-bye. Love
hey,
you.
Take Bye-bye. Care. Bye.